Listen, if this is your first time here or first time here this year, we're in this series, and the focus of it is In God We Trust. And the cute title is How I Learned to Stop Trusting the Pig, the Piggy Bank, in Money. And it all springs from Matthew chapter 6. Jesus is teaching the Sermon on the Mount. And in chapter 6, verse 19 through verse 24, he gives some insightful insights on where the direction of our lives need to go. And he says this. He says, listen, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And then he goes on to say, listen, you need to be careful because you cannot serve God and money. The truth is, a lot of us are living like that every single day. And we need to get our lives in order so that in everything we have and in all that we are, God will be honored. So we're talking about this whole area of finances. And you say, why did you start off the year talking about that? Because, I mean, it's such a lead area for our life. I mean, 15% of what Jesus said in the Gospels pertain to finances and the management of our resources. That's more than Jesus said about heaven and hell combined. I mean, this is an important issue, and we need to get it together and get it right. You know, people have said often that money talks. And that may be true, but I can tell you something that's even truer than that. Money walks. It'll walk into your life, walk right over you, and walk right out of your life. And in fact, in the Scripture, it tells us that in Proverbs chapter 23, listen to this. It says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it's gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. Anybody experience that? Man, I don't know where this money went, but it came in and it went out and it's gone. I mean, it just sprouted wings and flew off. I mean, that happens. And so when you think about that, man, it's important for us to talk about money. It's important for us to get things in order with our finances so that God can be honored in every area of our life. And so we're taking kind of a practical approach to the first few Sundays of the year, and we're talking about some financial issues and helping us all get our lives in order so that God can be honored in us. And listen, this is by no means meant to come across as, hey, we're trying to tell you how to run your life, or we're trying to get on to you about your money management. We're trying to help you out and help all of us out so that we can together, collectively, as a body of Christ, live a life that truly does honor Him, even in our resources. Now, let me just give you some resource rules that we learned last week. Okay, resource rules. We learn these rules so that our resources don't rule us. All right? And the first thing is this. God is the owner. Okay, God is the owner. No mistaking about it. God owns everything. Okay, He owns it all. He doesn't just own the part that you give back to Him. He owns what you use. Everything that you have doesn't belong to you. It still belongs to God. He's just entrusted it to you. And that brings us to the second part of that equation. That is that people are managers. Scripture puts it this way, that we're stewards. Okay, God is the owner. We're the managers. A manager absolutely has nothing. I mean, we own nothing. God owns everything. And everything that we have is a gift from Him, and He still owns it, even though He entrusted us. In fact, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 gives us insight in that. It says this, everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept His lot and rejoice in His toil, this is the gift of God. I mean, God gives us this, all right? Haggai chapter 2, verse 8 tells us that even though God gives it to us, He still owns it. The silver is mine, the gold is mine, declares the Lord of hosts. Okay, so God owns it all. He entrusted to us, and we're managers of whatever God entrusts to us. Now, I'm not saying you don't work hard. I'm not saying you're not smart to earn money. But this is everything that we have is a gift of God's grace. Everything that we get, God gives to us, and it still belongs to Him, and we're managers of it. Now, here are two little money managers kind of set up what I want to talk about today. The first one is this. We need to know that money is a neutral commodity. Money is not evil. That's not what 1 Timothy chapter 6 says. 1 Timothy chapter 6 says, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Money in itself is a neutral commodity. It can be used for good or for evil, for help or for hurt. Okay? Second thing we need to make, note we need to make is this. Money can have rewards if managed properly. And we've all experienced those rewards. But money also has risks. Risks. And in fact, a long time ago, when I was, really being discipled, the guy that was discipling me taught me this. He said, listen, your faithfulness to God will not be tested in times of adversity. And that's what I thought, man. When you go through tough times, man, your faithfulness is going to be tested. No. You're going to know in times of adversity you need God's help. I mean, if any of you walked outside today and you slipped on some ice and found yourself laying flat on your back, and if somebody was standing there and they offered you a hand, you'd take the hand because you knew you needed some help up. But if you're just walking down the sidewalk and somebody says, hey, let me help you out here, you say, no, I don't need any help. I got it going my own way. And in essence, that's true for us. Man, when things are good, we're riding the crest of the wave. Man, we're prosperous. We've got things in order. All right, God, you can go help somebody else because I got this thing going now. And I don't need you anymore. And so what we've got to realize is with money, with possessions, there are some very real risks. And let me give you some examples in Scripture. Five things I want you to jot down. Number one, the risk of forgetfulness. You see, you have a tendency to forget God altogether when things go good. Moses is talking to the children of Israel before they go in the Promised Land. And there were a lot of tests in the wilderness. And then they're getting ready to go to the Promised Land. I want you to listen to what he says to them. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 8. He says, take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his rules and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built good houses and live in them, when your herds and flocks multiply, and your silver and gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart will be lifted up, and you will forget the Lord your God. Beware lest you say in your heart, listen to this, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. And if you forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you today that you shall surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so shall you perish because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? I mean, he's saying, hey, guys, you need to watch out. When you get in the Promised Land, you settle down, you build fine houses, and you plant your crops, and they're multiplied, and you get your herd settled, and they multiply, and your silver multiplies, and your gold multiplies. You're going to be tempted just to forget God altogether. Hey, I got it going on now. That's one of the risks of possessions, of finances. In fact, you may even believe what Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 19 says. Bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Just not true. Risk number two, unfaithfulness. Unfaithfulness to God. You see, when we get things going on and they're rolling our way and we got plenty of money in our pocket, we don't just forget God, we're unfaithful to him. We start serving the money in our pocket instead of God himself. Now, Job in Job 31 is responding to God and he paints this little scenario, and I want you to listen to what he says. He said, if I have made gold my trust or called fine gold my confidence, if I have rejoiced because my wealth was abundant or because my hand had found much, if I have looked at the sun when it shone or the moon moving in splendor, and my heart has been secretly enticed and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be an iniquity, would be a sin to be punished by the judges, for I would have been false to God above. Did you hear what he said? He said, if I had put my trust in gold, or called fine gold my confidence, if I'd rejoiced because of my wealth was abundant. In other words, man, if I'm holding on to this, as this has really become my God, that would be iniquity. Because I've been unfaithful to my God, the God above. In fact, in Proverbs chapter 30, and he's very insightful, the writer of Proverbs, in saying this. Listen to what he says. He's saying to God, remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. He's saying, hey, I don't want a whole lot. I don't give me an over and abundant lifestyle. And don't make me broke, because you know what? I may disown you. I know my own weakness, and I may disown you in either case. So just give me what I need today. That very insightful prayer. Number three, risk number three, unfruitfulness. Unfruitfulness. I mean, productivity for the kingdom. And that happens to a lot of people when you get things out of order in your life and you're serving the wrong things. Man, you can just be totally unproductive for God's work in this world. Listen to this. This is just one piece of this parable in Mark chapter 4. It's the parable of the soils, and Jesus says, and others are the ones sown among thorns. They are those who hear the word, talking about people, they hear the word, but the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. You just become unproductive. Number four, destructive living. Destructive living. Last week we talked about 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, but I want to couple this together with verse 9. Just listen to this and what he says about this. Paul's writing to Timothy, and he says, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils, and it is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains. Did you hear that? Now, let me tell you something. The things that money buys are attractive. And it's easy to get your eyes off God and onto the things of this world and to have your heart stolen by the enticements of the world. It happens. Happens to people all the time. In fact, in Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, Jesus said this, for what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his own soul? Or what can a man give in exchange or return for his soul? Pretty powerful words. Risk number five, slavery. Slavery. Proverbs 22:7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the what? To the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender. Now, that's where a lot of people live. Every single day. I have people, you know, talking to people and trying to work with people. People say, well, I just don't have enough money to pay my bills. And you start looking at all the bills that they've accumulated, and so much of it relates to indebtedness. And they have become such a debtor that it is a weight around their neck, and it is difficult for them to make it work. And you become enslaved to it. Now, you can imagine, he's used this illustration, the borrower or a servant or slave to the lender. What if you have multiple lenders? Then you've got multiple owners, and you're slave to multiple places. And I can tell you something, that just produces miserable living and ineffectiveness in your ability to be generous and giving and using the resources that God gives you to impact this world with the gospel of Jesus. And let me tell you something, God gives us what he gives us as followers of Jesus so that we can utilize what he gives us to impact this world with the gospel of Jesus. That's laying up treasures in heaven. Now, last week, Mike and I had a great discussion, kind of laying the foundation of getting our financial life in order. And today, we're going to have another discussion. I want us to talk about some of the issues that relate to indebtedness, because it's a real problem today in society. This is Mike Burke. He's the executive director of Eagles Landing Christian Foundation, which is a ministry of our church. And spends a lot of time counseling with people, helping them get their financial picture in order so that they can live the life that God desires for them to live and honor him with their wealth. And so one of the things that we discover often, I do have rhythm. That's incredible. I don't know what's happening. Are y'all tapping on the mic back there? Yeah, it's me. All right, I just won't move. I'll stay motionless for 30 minutes. I can't do it. All right. Yeah. It's his problem. All right. One of the things we did was I asked Mike, I said, put together a list of red flags for debt issues. Okay, and so we put together a list, 14 items. This is what I want you to do. I want you to take out your bulletin. You can make this list on your bulletin, but at the top of your bulletin, every time Mike reads one of these and it relates to you, put a mark on your page. All right? Somebody already said ouch. It is like crazy, isn't it? We ain't even started yet. But just put a mark on your page. I just want you to do your own assessment, okay? Now, you got to have a pen to do it. Some of you are just staring at me like, how to have a pen, you need to get a piece of paper, and let's make the marks, okay? This is not going to be difficult. I guarantee you won't. You might sweat during this, but it won't be because of exertion. It'll be because of pressure.
Yeah.
All right?
We put together 14 items that are potential red flags with debt issues within a family. I'm going to read through these really quickly, and you just kind of do the self-analysis. If it affects you, just put a check there on the list. Number one, you spend increasing amounts of income on indebtedness. The debt-to-income ratio needs to be no greater. Now, this is based on gross income. Debt-to-income ratio should be no greater than 35 to 40%. Number two, you cannot keep track of the amount of debt. In other words, a bill comes in, you tuck it away, and you wonder, if I just kind of turn my back on it, it'll go away. You've got to face it head on. Number three, you make only minimal payments on a credit card. Here's a very short example. You have a $5,000 balance on a credit card. You only pay $100 a month. You're going to pay on that for 74 months. That's 6 years and 2 months. You're going to pay interest of $2,082. So instead of a $5,000 indebtedness, you're going to have a $7,082 indebtedness. That would be like me turning to Pastor Tim and say, do you have $7? I'll swap you my $5 for $7. But you multiply that times 1,000, you see what kind of what's going on. $5,000, you pay $7,082. Number four, you're occasionally late in making payments on bills, credit cards, and other expenses. Again, these are some red flags. Number five, you utilize savings to pay down debts. Mm. This happens very often. Yeah. Savings are there for emergency situations. It's for a savings account. It's not set aside to pay debt.
Yeah.
Number six, continued purchases on your credit cards while you're trying to pay them off. Mm. You continue to put charges on a card. I mean, you're just digging a deeper hole trying to get out of a hole. Okay? Number seven, you've reached the limit on credit cards. Here's what folks will do. They'll reach a limit on a credit card, and their credit score, ironically, is still good, and they'll go borrow another credit card, and you start, before you know it, you have 24 credit cards, and
it's
they're all maxed out.
It's still good because you're making the minimum payments on your cards, but you're still limited out, so you just go get another card and keep on going.
That's right. Number eight, you use cash advances from your credit cards to pay other bills. Number nine, you've bounced checks or overdrawn your bank accounts. Again, these are red flags. Number 10, you use credit to buy cash items. You go in the grocery store to buy groceries. You go to buy gasoline, and you put it on a credit card. The credit card comes in. It starts growing. You only pay the minimum payments. You see exponentially what's going to happen. That's going to grow, and you're going to dig yourself deeper into debt. Number 11, your credit interest rates are extremely high, or you've been denied credit. Hmm. Number 12, you're commonly contacted by credit collectors. 2009, the Credit Card Act came to be to protect the consumer. And if you are in consumer debt trouble and you have creditors beginning to call you, by law, they can only contact you. Now, they can call you all day long, but they, by law, can only contact you one time during that day, between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. If they go beyond that, they've broken a federal law.
That sounds limiting. I guess it is limiting in some case, but I mean, that drives me crazy. Every day they can call you and make contact with you.
Every day.
Whew. All right.
Number 13, you begin not to be honest with your friends and your family members about what's going on with your indebtedness. And number 14, worry or anxiety is affecting your health. There was a study done by the School of Medicine at Princeton University saying that debt is a direct correlation to a negative impact on your health.
All right. Do you make those checks? Do you make those checks on your paper? and just total up what your score is. There was only 14. How many of those are affecting you right now? I mean, they're affecting your life right now. I mean, it gets kind of revealing when you start looking at your finances. Now, I want to talk about a couple of these. One of these is you make this commitment. Okay, well, we're going to pay down our credit cards, but at the same time, you're using them. So, you know, if this is the picture, this is the length, you're cutting off some on the front end with minimal payments, but you're still charging here. This thing is just going to get longer and longer and longer. I mean, you're just digging yourself a deeper grave along the way if you keep doing that.
That's correct.
And, I mean, what we're talking about here is not an easy fix. I mean, it's not like this quick fix. Like, you're going to go out here today and boom, it's all going to change. I mean, what we talked about last week applied to what we talked about.
Changing behavior. Best way to change behavior is with a plastectomy. Take a pair of scissors and cut up the credit cards.
Yeah. Yeah, which is hard to do, isn't it, you know? And, you know, we've heard of people, you know, take them, stick them in the freezer, freeze them, but you can always bust the ice and get them out if you're that desperate. But that's a big point in changing behavior, and that's got to stop on the back end, or this front end's not going to help at all. I mean, you're just going to still get in deeper and deeper debt. Another thing that you said that was interesting is, you know, your credit interest rate's extremely high, or you've been denied credit. It's amazing, you know, what happens to you along the way when you're dealing with, you know, interest rates and how much that keeps adding on to your accumulated debt.
I mean, absolutely.
It's incredible. One of the things we did was we said, all right, let's try to put a practical example together of that happening, you know. Because I meet so many people, Mike, that say, well, you know what, I want to be this and I want to do this, but I just don't make enough money. And what you find out when you start looking at it, they give a lot of money away through all of the interest that they're paying.
Absolutely.
Mike put one scenario together. I want you to take a look at this.
This is based on going to an electronics company, and this is real data. Let's just say we found a $2,000 television that we want to purchase. So instead of saving up for it and going and paying cash for it, we do this. We go and put it on a no interest for 18-month plan, okay? So the minimum monthly payment is $25 or 1% of the balance, but will not meet a paid in full balance with 18 months.
So you get the bill in the mail. It says minimum payment due $25, and you say, oh, I'm making my payments. But at the end of your 18 months, you're not going to be paid up.
Exactly. And if you only paid $1,000 of that $2,000 commitment and that 18-month period comes, here's a scenario of what happens. You still have a balance of $1,000 remaining. Okay, they're going to charge you 28% on the full value of that item. That's $560. So the new balance now that you owe, and you've already paid $1,000, but you still have $1,000 left beyond the 18-month period, the new balance is $1,560. Now that interest accrues at 28% from day one. New balance being $1,560. With a $468 penalty fee based on the amount owed times 30%, okay? We don't make this stuff up. This is what companies charge. So you have a new adjusted balance of $2,028. Total paid over the life of the loan, $3,028. Now, if you take the $1,028 in interest that you would have paid on that, paid cash for that item, you would have taken the $1,028 and invested that into a growth stock mutual fund at somewhere around 5.5% interest for 2 years. That would be an additional $145 that you would make on that. So, to boil it on down, in essence or ostensibly, you paid $3,173 for a $2,000 television. That's 59% more than that item cost when you walked in the store.
So, what you're essentially doing is you're overpaying for whatever you buy. I mean, it's like walking into Best Buy, and they've got the $2,000 TV, and I look at it and go, wow, that is a great TV. It is so great. I tell you what, I'm not going to give you $2,000 for it. I'm going to give you $3,178 because I love this TV.
Impulsive.
Yeah, and people say, this guy is an idiot. Let him come back in here and shop again because he is overpaying for every item. You say, nobody's going to do that. They do it every day.
Absolutely.
We do it every single day. And that's why you get in this cycle and you get enslaved and you're given money away. You know, last week we talked about taking advantage of free money and we talked about examples of that. Well, now you're just doling out money like you got it running out your ears. I mean, you're giving money away every single day when you do this. Like Mike said, it's like, you know, him having a $5 bill and said, hey, I like that $5 bill. I'll give you $7 for it. You'd say, oh, sure, but you're an idiot, but sure. Go ahead and buy it for $7. Well, that's what you do when you're using interest. You're in credit all the time, and you're paying things on credit unnecessarily, and you're getting yourself in a world of hurt because it's just going to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, and you think you're living well, but over time, you're really making everybody else live well.
Major purchases, you need to put 72 hours in between the time you find something impulsively that you think you want and to the time that you go back and you think 72 hours later, do I really need that? Or is there a strategy that I can implement where I can save that $2,000 over a certain amount of time? And then you start dreaming about that and you work toward it, and there's some discipline that's involved in that. And that's a good...
Again, we're talking about change of behavior. Now, when you said that, you know, one thing sparked in my mind was you need to have a financial plan in place. Don't let the place where you're going determine your financial. In other words, I'd say, you know what, you can afford this. We did your credit check. You can afford this. Yeah. Because they're going to tell you can afford more than you can afford.
That's right.
Just to make money. Now, the problem is you can't do that without consequences.
Exactly.
There are going to be consequences to it. And you put together a list of six things that just obvious things that kind of jump out at you.
Here's a short list, kind of concise. There are six consequences, six obvious consequences of too much debt. Number one, and this is based on your credit score. Again, based on your credit score. Number one, makes it harder for you to get a job. A lot of employers will look at a credit score of a potential employee and see kind of what their credit score is, okay? Number two, your interest rates oftentimes is based on your credit score. Number three, insurance rates could conceivably be based upon your credit score. Number four, keep you from getting an apartment or even purchasing a home. Sometimes interest rates are based on your credit score, and oftentimes landlords will do a credit check on a Social Security number before they allow them to rent that apartment. Number five, collection agencies will begin to call you. And number six, if there is a judgment passed against you, your employer can garnish your wages.
You know, you look at that list and you think, it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. You know, what's the average credit card interest rate?
14.35%.
14.35%. You know, that's pretty steep. And it can go up as high as
30%.
30%. I mean, that's amazing. And when you get yourself in bad shape, your interest rate is going to be at the highest. I remember trying to help a friend of mine, had some transportation issues, went to somebody in our church who was in the car business and said, hey, I need a good, inexpensive vehicle to try to help this person out. And we were helping them out some financially, but then they were going to have to pay for some of it. And he called me back and said, hey, we really need to find cash. Because of the person's financial situation, the lowest interest rate I can find is 27% to borrow a car. I mean, it affects you. It has an effect on your financial life when you get yourself in this amount. When you get yourself in that situation, the debt multiplies because of that. Instead of getting a 7.5% interest rate on a car, you got a 27%. So it just multiplied again. And you're, again, digging yourself a deeper and deeper grave. Now, you know, looking for some practical advice. Somebody says, okay, I've got multiple lenders out here that I'm indebted to. How do I attack this thing? You know, if I'm going to get a plan, cutting up the credit cards, that's a good idea. You know, run them through a shredder. Freeze them and put them in somebody else's freezer. You know, don't put them in yours. Put them in somebody else's freezer. You know, that's a good idea. But I'm going to attack this thing and I'm going to get rid of this. Sometimes people start in the wrong place.
Yeah,
so.
A couple of things. Number one, if you're going to attack what we call an unsecured debt issue in your situation, you have maybe five credit cards. mathematically, you could make a point to pay off the highest interest rate credit card first. However, that doesn't do anything to change behavior. What we're in the ministry to do is try to change behavior, because it took a certain pattern to get an individual in this situation. So it's going to take a pattern of changing behavior. 20% knowledge, 80% behavior. Take the smallest credit card that you have. Let's just say that's $25 a month. Try to save up. If that's a $1,000 balance that you have on it, save up $1,000, pay that off. Take that $25, put against the next smallest that may be $50 a month. So instead of paying $50 a month on that next smallest, you're paying $75 a month. And it's snowballing, and you have a plan, and you're changing your behavior all at the same time.
And that's good advice, because you can work yourself back out. And again, we're talking about changing behavior, not just a quick fix here. Now, if we were to say, here are three things that you need to put in place to kind of get yourself going in the right direction.
Okay, number one, you've got to become aware of the problem. I remember early on in our marriage, we found ourselves struggling with some credit card debt. And a bill would come in, and I would look at that, Ray. I would not even open the bill. I'd just tuck it aside, thinking it would go away. Maybe the rapture would happen, and I'll leave it for somebody else, you know. And but we've got to face it head on.
I've heard people say that, actually. Yeah, we're going to be in as much debt as possible when Christ turns, leave the debt to the Antichrist. Not a good plan, okay?
Yeah. So we've got to become aware of exactly what our indebtedness is. Number two, we need a level of accountability. Our spouse, when we united in marriage, we became one in God's eyes. Our spouse needs to be a level of accountability for one another. One of the biggest deterrents to a marriage is finances, okay? We see marriages break up all the time, and one of the symptoms is finances.
Well, it's like a magnifying glass. I mean, any problem you have in your home, if there's financial prayer, it just blows it up, just makes it bigger. Whatever issue you got going on, the grain of sand is now a boulder.
Amen.
And so it just adds pressure. You're exactly right.
And you may need a third-party accountability person. I have a group of guys in my life that hold me accountable for things. Years ago, I met with them, and I says, if you see anything going on in my life that you feel like is not godly and it's embarrassing to the kingdom, would you please let me know? And in our finances, we need someone that we can totally trust to be brutally honest with us. If we're on the eve of making a purchase and we're having to borrow money to pay for that, we need to run that by not only our spouse, but we need another level of accountability with a third-party individual.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, that's some great advice. For example, you got to know yourself. And you just say, you know what, I'm not really good with money. I mean, you just say, I'm not good with money. I'm impulsive, and I get things out of whack, and then we try to catch up, and then we get caught up, and then I get things out of whack again. I need some accountability. You need to find somebody who is good, okay? Let them be an accountability partner for you. You put together a budget plan, and if you get paid every week or every other week, you go to them, okay, just deposit the money in the account. Now, how are we spending it? And you don't spend anything unless they tell you you can.
Amen.
And you say, man, I'm not going to let somebody else do that. We're trying to change behavior here, okay? We're trying to help all of us get in a position where we can use the resources God's given us for His glory, and it's going to take a little bit to do that. Last week we talked about 30 days to what was 30 days?
90 days to change of behavior.
Yeah,
90
days.
First 30 days, we take a look at it. Second 30 days, we start adjusting. And then the third 30-day period, the third month, the behavior starts to change.
Right.
So it's not going to happen quickly.
It's going to take at least 3 months, then,
yes,
we're saying. So it's good to have that. If you need it, man, find it. Be honest with yourself about where you are. That's why it's dangerous. If you can't resist using your credit card, don't carry it. If you don't have it, you can't use it. You know, it's like if you know, you eat food and you just can't stop, well, don't buy it. If you don't, if it's not in your refrigerator, if it's still at Publix, guess what? You're not eating it, you know? I have not, to this day, seen anybody standing at the cooler at Publix with the ice cream open and a spoon just eating it right there. That's just too embarrassing. I mean, you're just not going to do that, right? So the same thing true with the credit card. You just don't take it with you. So you need that accountability, and it's important. And then
exactly.
Get assistance.
Assistance. January the 30th of this year, we're a blessed congregation to offer some of these ministries that we offer. 30th of January, Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University begins again. I say go ahead and get pre-enrolled in that. Debbie Shoemaker is the director of finance at our church, and she administrates that program. It's an incredible program to get involved in. Blake Edge, who's a friend of mine who's an attorney, he facilitates that class. And Blake and I meet together once a week, once every other week, and play off of one another in this area of assisting folks. And then the third way of assistance is through the foundation. I meet with couples individually. I will, if someone's married, I will not meet with them individually. I'll only meet with them as a couple, because you know why. Okay, of course, if it's a single individual, obviously I will. But call the foundation, send an email, and set up an appointment. I'll be glad to meet with them personally.
And that's really important. And I said in the first service it was starting September 30th. I wonder why everybody was looking at me. Hey, we're going to offer help, and it's starting September 30th. That was going to help a whole lot. But it is starting January 30th, okay, just a couple of weeks. So I want to encourage you to get plugged into that. Take advantage of that. And if you need personal assistance, putting together a budget, analyzing your financial position, make sure you call the foundation, get something set up, and sit down and take an honest look. And Mike will be brutally honest with you where you are and where you need to be and how you can get there. And it's very, very helpful. Now, I want you to look, write down this proverb, Proverbs 9:9. Great proverb. And I want you to listen to what it says. Kind of brings everything we've talked about today together. It says this: give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. We want to be wise in this world. And we want to be the righteous one that's increasing in learning. And we don't want to be foolish with anything in our life. With our personal lives, our marriages, our homes, the finances that we've been entrusted with. And so, let's take what we're learning together, and let's put some feet and hands to it. Don't just think this is we're accumulating list. I don't want to accumulate a list for your note department. Okay, this is accumulating some wisdom so you can put it into place and actually work this out and be in a position later in your life where you, I mean, God can be honored in every area, including your finances. And you don't want to be here year after year after year. You don't have any people having good intentions young in their life to get things in order, and they never do, and now they're at retirement age and said, I just never did it. Year after year went by, I just never did it, and now I'm still in a mess. And so we got to start somewhere, and today's a good place to start, and we want to be wise, we want to be Proverbs 9:9 kind of people. And so let's live that way. Now listen, if you're here today, and you don't know Christ, what we're talking about is really about managing one aspect of the resources that God gives to us. But the first and foremost need in your life is to know the God who loves you and has provided salvation through His Son, Jesus. And in just a minute, we'll have what we call an invitation. We'll have an invitation song. And at that time, I just want to invite you, if you got a hunger in your heart to know God, and God's been working in your life, been putting people in your place to talk to you about a life with Christ, experiencing His salvation and forgiveness, then just come down the aisle, get your friend and come down the aisle and take one of our pastors by the hand and say, listen, I want to know this God you're talking about. I want to know His salvation. And we're just going to take you aside for a minute, open up the Bible, and share with you the good news of the gospel of Jesus. Or maybe you're here today and you look at that checklist and you said, man, I got 12 checks on my page out of those 14. Something needs to change in my life. Maybe you need to pray that God would give you the strength and wisdom and discipline to get it done. Or maybe you didn't have any checks on your page, but there's some every area of your life that's out of balance and you just need to get it in order. And today's a good day to get on your face before God and say, God, have your way in me.